Pico Iyer is our guest on Travel with Rick Steves, and he's the author of The Half-Known Life in Search of Paradise. And one place that would be in the running for the closest place on earth to heaven would be Jerusalem. It's the holy ground for the three great monotheistic faiths, the Jewish, Muslim, and Christian faith, and God must have had a wicked sense of humor to make them all share this same piece of real estate.
Within a few hundred meters of one another, exactly. And yet, it's such a moving place. Sometimes I'll be walking down the street here in Japan, and I'll just feel this call to go to Jerusalem, even though I'm not Muslim or Jewish or Christian. It packs a spiritual and emotional punch like almost nowhere this side of Varanasi.
You know, it's so interesting to me. Of course, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are special days for the three religions. So you could, if you're multi-religious, you got 3 days off, I guess, 3 days of rest and sacred days. It's a cacophony of religious ritual. I mean, you've got processions of Christian pilgrims carrying the cross up the Via Dolorosa. You got Jewish worshipers praying fervently at the Western Wall. You've got Muslims at the Dome of the Rock. And then at Damascus Gate, you've got soldiers with machine guns crouched in the crenellations overseeing it all. What a crazy mix.
And I think one of the shocks is that there's not just an antagonism between the three great monotheisms, but even within them, because Shia Muslim is at odds with Sunni Muslim, ultra-Orthodox Jew. It doesn't approve of his secular cousin.
And then not only stress between the different faiths, but within the faiths, if you consider the Church of the Holy Sepulchre so important to the Christian faith, what do we have there?
We have six Christian orders, all sharing the same space, sleeping under the same roof. But if the Franciscans step 1 millimeter into the Greek Orthodox area, they'll start going after each other with brooms. They sometimes almost come to outright war within the Christian groups.
And Pico, when you think about that church, so sacred to Christians, where Jesus was supposed to have been buried, I remember on one of the eaves, there's an old, old ladder just there. It looks like somebody forgot to take it in. And I was told it's been there for generations because the different faiths, the different denominations that are in charge of that church, they can't agree on whose responsibility is to take it down.
And also what you see on the front steps is that wonderfully for, I think, 800 years, it's two Muslim families that are in charge of locking the doors to that church and opening every night and opening them every morning. And yet it's interesting because in the midst of all this division, every day when I'm in Jerusalem, I sleep in the old city. I wake up very early. I walk in the pre-dawn dark through those barely paved narrow alleyways to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And then I go around to the side of it that's not very crowded. And there's a little cave there. There's nothing there but a kind of rocky ledge and a flickering candle. And I sit there, and something about it just moves me to tears. Maybe it's 1,700 years of passion and devotion that have been brought to them. Maybe it's something else. But in the midst of the tumult and the dissent, there's something that stirs everybody's heart, I think.
Oh, yes. I mean, whether it actually happened there or not, the fact that for centuries people of great faith have been venerating that spot, it gives it some sort of power, I think. And the whole city, to me, is that way. The falafel man, peace brother, have a falafel. The pomegranate juice boy, have some pomegranate juice. The merchants, the pilgrims, the tourists, the children, the spices, the cardamom. It's a festival of the senses. And you've got all of that interfaith stress at the same time. I mean, the old city is divided into four quarters, right?
Yes. Yes, and the city of faith has always been a city of conflict. But just as you were saying a minute ago, when you go there, you could be 11 centuries ago. I mean, your all sense of time dissolves, and you're in this timeless space. I remember once I flew there from California, and I was staying in a little pilgrim's hostel, and at breakfast I met two other travelers, and it turned out that they had come from the next town down in California. So I asked them, oh, how did you get here? You know, did you take United Airlines or Lufthansa? Oh, we walked. It turned out that they had walked all the way across America, taken a boat across to Europe, and then walked for another year to get there. And that's the kind of devotion that makes it a special place.
Goodness.
What the traveler brings, as you said before, what the pilgrim brings transforms the landscape even for the rest of us.
In so many cases, these sort of cauldrons of history and culture and faith and humanity are surrounded by mighty walls. The walls of Jerusalem are really evocative that way to me, because within those walls, you've got the Armenian quarter, the Christian quarter, the Arab quarter, the Jewish quarter, The Jewish quarter is rebuilt. It feels new because it was rebuilt after being destroyed in a war in the last generation. You've got a map of the Armenian genocide in the Armenian quarter. You've got the Chamber of the Holocaust in the Jewish quarter. You've got green lights on the minarets and Jewish flags planted as if claiming land in the Arab quarter. Every religion has sects of their own, each with their own distinct robes and hats and hairstyles. And to just be swimming in that sea of humanity, it's fun.
It is fun. I think the first day I got to Jerusalem, my first trip, I actually took a walk all along the top of those walls, which is a great way of getting a sense of the geography. Often in the night times, I'll climb to the rooftop of my building and to look out at night when you see the green-lit minarets and the crosses and the people at the Western Wall. It is just one of the great sights on earth, I think.
And Jerusalem is literally the city of peace, Jerusalem, and it is fascinating to think that it's a 20-minute bike ride from the place in Bethlehem where people believe Jesus was born to the place in Jerusalem where he was crucified. But local people can't go to each place because of a wall. My guides in Bethlehem can't go to Jerusalem. My guide in Jerusalem can't go to Bethlehem. But as a tourist, I can go back and forth across that wall. It's a city which is an armed camp with a wall cutting through it. And it's still a city where, as you wrote in your book, hope is stubborn.
It's a city that breaks your heart for the reasons you just mentioned, restores your heart, breaks it again, and sends you home not knowing exactly where you've been, but you've been somewhere powerful.
Pico, thank you for putting so much energy into inspiring us to give meaning to our travels. When I read your book, I can see a traveler armed only with a notepad, not taking selfies, but opening himself up to the world and celebrating the diversity on this planet and helping us find and better understand paradises and then look at them through a lens of reality and see that there are still struggles.